Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
You're listening to MacBreak Tech. Backmatic, automatic backup. We now join a conversation already in progress. Even if you do nothing but use .Mac, you're way better off than having nothing.
Right.
And backup only
especially stuff like address book, like the real nerve center.
Right. Address book, stuff. Mail.
The stuff that you accumulate over a really long time. Like, you know, your mom's address. How many people remember that anymore?
Right. Before I even sneeze with any sort of backup or even a .Mac syncing, I go and I back up my calendar and my address book like manually before I do anything.
Where do you put it?
Just on the desktop. Just as a total fire sale.
Just drag copy something to somewhere else.
You start the recording?
Yeah.
No, I go in the app and do the save as archive. Unfortunately, they give them two different semantic meanings, which drives me crazy.
Okay.
So iCal, you go under file, backup iCal.
Well, but there's several different ways of doing it.
Which creates the archive file.
Right.
In an address book, you go file, export, address book archive. Now, why?
why don't you just make an automator action that does backup?
Yeah, you can. But I'm talking about, this is just a UI thing with Apple. Like, okay. Come on, guys. These apps are in the same family.
But this is the whole brushed metal problem.
Brushed metal.
Yeah, remember when there was brushed metal, right. And then some apps didn't have brushed metal; they had brushed gray. And then
it's some Mac apps no longer share that consistent user experience.
I know, but at least nomenclature should be the same. Anyway,
at least they still have a file menu.
Yeah,
you're lucky they gave you an address book, Craig. Yeah. Just be thankful.
Yeah, you know, it could
that
be
they
like,
gave you an address
oh,
book.
Oh, come on!
But they saw fit.
It could be like 1992, where you have to spend $75 to get an address book.
Okay, I'm grateful.
Hey, I spent $400 or $500.
Yeah, you're spending $2,500 for an address book.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money for an address book.
Oh yeah,
but the anyway. Idea being that if you've spent the $100 for .Mac, then
use
the powers that come with that. It runs with 10.4 and 10.5. It just you
use
run,
your powers
you,
for
you
good.
You double click backup, you click one thing, and then you never think about it again. It's just doing that in the background.
And yeah, well, you go in the control panel or the system preferences control panel. That's but once, showing my age,
right? But once you've done it once, you don't have to go and set it again. It'll do your
if you
syncing.
Tell it to sync regularly. Yeah.
Now that you can hit sync issues, and because I'm somebody who syncs with an iPhone and three different Macs and syncs my Mac system to Google calendars, you can get weird sync issues. So that's one thing you always have to be aware of.
Right.
That's where your tip about going into the file menu and doing an export or a backup of the calendar. And I do it once a month with my address book and my calendar. I back it up. Minimum once
so
a month.
So do you use Calendar to remind you to back up Calendar?
Actually, I do. I actually have a schedule in there. It's a to-do item, and the to-do item doesn't go away until I back up my calendar.
Hmm. See, your to-do could actually invoke Automator.
Yes.
That would make the backups and then chuck that up to,
it can do that now.
To somewhere
correct.
Else. You can do that in Leopard anyway.
Yeah, in Leopard. No, that's what I mean. You can do that now in the new OS that I could actually have my – I haven't done that yet, but I could do that.
Yes. What is it exported as? Is it an XML file? Something that would be like Subversion or – source control friendly?
Yeah, you can. One of the interesting things about iCal now is you can export individual calendars. So if you have multiple calendars like I do, you can export your work one separate from your home calendar or different things like that.
It just spits out an ICS file for each of those? Or?
If I remember right, in fact, let me do that right now.
I imagine it does.
Yeah. Have one for each girlfriend.
Shh. Oh, no. So yeah, when you export the file out...
But see, I'm of the idea that I don't even want to do an export. I just want it to be dealt with.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know,
after all, it is a computer.
No, I know, but I'm just saying these two bits of information are so valuable. Like, they are the top of the food chain of data for my computer.
Okay.
So that's why I'm uber.
So, and that's good. Does that go anywhere else once you've exported it? Does it go on a pen drive or your secure web server?
I just do this before I do the .Mac sync, which I'm just about to do at this very moment.
Okay.
I what I'm going to do is I'm going to replace all my .Mac with what's on this computer. Because okay. I do that once in a while, too, where I can override and say just completely replace.
Uh-huh.
And but I cannot do that until I manually back up my...
Well, you could, but you're
I
risking.
I could. My own personal...
It's a mental
block. It's a mental thing, because those two collections of information are the most valuable okay. to me. Mm-hmm. Or the hardest to replace. Most time consuming.
I think that syncing is pretty cool, because... The other day I needed a – well, this was not the other day, but this would have been months ago before I even knew that this feature was in my pants, was that I needed a phone number and I had my iPod with me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's on here. And I mm-hmm. drilled down to mm-hmm. it and there was mm-hmm. my phone number.
Wait till you get an iPhone. You're going to love it.
You know, I've held out for a whole calendar year.
Keep going, dude. Keep going till spring.
Exactly. Hey, I do have a new doorbell, though.
Oh, boy. I did notice.
Yeah, did you see my new doorbell? It has a keyword on it.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yes, he's moving up in the world. Majorly upgraded his doorbell.
Jeez, John.
But it has that other company's OS on it.
Not
Windows Mobile. Windows Mobile 5. What's wrong with that? It plays music. Oh. It has a calendar.
He said it on the air.
I know. Oh, well.
I'll hack it to something else eventually.
I gave my Lions and Ants rant before, I think.
What's on that? Show. Oh, no. Do it again. Rant.
I don't want to.
No. What's so?
We promise not to preach about data back.
Okay. Well,
but here's not. This is not a preach. This is my metaphor.
Okay.
And I said it in the email that I sent out today. Basically, to me, when I visualize a hard drive, to me, it's a box of ants.
Okay. We had ants on the table.
We had ants, which was very interesting.
Somebody left a fruitcake out, and the ants finally found it. There's freaking 1,000 ants on the table.
They've been crawling. One has been crawling on my screen, dude.
Oh, yeah. See the leftover ants from the fruitcake fiasco.
So the thing is like people say, you know, you hear hard drive, and the word hard makes it sound strong, doesn't
safe.
It? And safe.
Oh.
And so, you know, the analogy that I've made is that it's maybe called a hard drive, but it's not really hard. Uh-huh. It's not a lion. Now, a lion is a very strong animal. It's hard to kill. But once it's dead, it's all dead, right? And it's actually kind of...
Want to let the lion out of the cage.
No. You don't want, not at Christmas. And you also don't want to... It's hard to mate lions, really. It's hard to grow new lions. Because
I have no experience with lions.
Oh, believe me. I mean, I've read about it.
Right. And, you're not... You know, there's San Francisco have... People have all kinds of things.
I know. Well, that's exactly.
Okay.
So anyway, moving on.
Lions.
So our data is not a lion. It's not a hard drive. It's a soft box of ants.
Okay. And why ants?
Because in the evolutionary scheme of things, what do ants have as an evolutionary advantage?
More biomass, all told.
Well, all told. No, that's true. Good point.
Yeah, there's more ants biomass wise than there are people.
Yes. But
that's not what you're talking about.
What they can do is they can reproduce very quickly.
It's a lot of ants.
And very efficiently, whereas reproducing lions takes a lot longer. You can't reproduce a lot of lions. Mm. Ants are very weak. You take a finger to kill them. It takes more than a finger to kill a lion. But that you can make a bunch of ants really fast. Mm. So data is not a lion, it's ants. And so the only evolutionary advantage you have to make your data, quote, safe, is to duplicate it as many times as possible. Mm-hmm.
So if you have a lot of ants, you will always have ants.
You can make more ants and make the same ants all the time.
But if you only have one colony...
And you kill the queen, which is also known as a directory file.
Yeah, but you kill the queen. Yeah, then the data is still going to be there for a while.
Yep.
You got to go find it.
You got to go find it. And it's all be disorganized because everyone's lost their queen.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's going to be...
No, it's...
And we've talked about that before, you know, what to do if your drive does die. But if you have backup...
Then you're fine.
Yeah, the thing is that the idea is, for example, if you are backing up to a server, mm-hmm. that the drive that you're backing up to is still only a single spindle, that's essentially not having a backup.
If it's better than nothing. Copy.
It's better than not having a backup, but let's just say that the drive dies and the other drive dies at the same time. Now you have no data.
Right, but the likeliness of two events like that happening simultaneously are low.
It happens.
It does happen.
Yeah,
but
it's happened recently.
Yeah. Well, is there some sort of EMP pulse that happened?
I'm just saying that there was a case in my office just mm-hmm. recently where the hard drive that was the, quote, backup drive mm-hmm. for the day-to-day stuff went away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The computer that needed something else or that was backing up to that, the guy thought that there was a backup, so he deletes his file because he needs
His file. It didn't crash.
Okay, so I'm just saying that because the mentality is, oh, there's a backup, I don't need this, delete.
Right. Yeah, well, that's
as opposed to multiple backups where it's on a drive here and it's on the server there, and if the primary goes down, the workstation and the backup still
Has it. Nice about synchronizing. For example, a .Mac, I have three computers and an iPhone and actually an iPod that are all synchronizing with it whenever I hook those together. So I have, in essence, five different distinct
that's the
particular set of data.
The contact data information, you know, that stuff that there's hundred takes months and years to accumulate and
moments
it's really small.
Wipe out.
Okay? It's really small, right.
And the thing with that is that's easy to back up. Mm-hmm. The big problem that I have is that I'm dealing with movie files.
Right.
I'm dealing with, for example, a company, you know, every one of the video files that this company's ever made in the last 60 years, you know, I don't want to go through the effort of collecting that stuff again.
Yeah.
It's too much of an effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to have that on one single spindle 500 gig drive,
no, it's dumb.
It's essentially, you know, for me to recreate that would take 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Right. One copy of data is charming. It's an illusion.
Right. And that's what I was using about the server analogy. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea is, oh, it's backed up. Right. You lose the drive. The guy deletes the file.
Right.
Now there's no backup.
Right. Right. Well, and that's where if it's important data, you need to have multiple redundant copies, either offsite at different locations, and optimally you have your really important data at different locations on a server cloud somewhere else that's backed up, and then you also have a physical copy burned to drive disk, or you have a removable drive.
Let's talk about Craig's normal day-to-day strategy for backing up.
Right.
Okay. Because you're dealing with the same problem that I'm dealing.
Mm-hmm. On a smaller scale, you have a company to deal with. Yeah. I just have me, right?
Yeah, okay. So I have a company to deal with. Right. And I have to. Here's the thing with this company. It has to be automatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The kids will not do anything to save themselves.
Right. But people in general won't, right?
Mm-hmm. No, people in general won't. And this was the point that Ben was making earlier, was that this is trusted.
He's pointing to the laptop.
Yeah. I didn't tap my head. This is trusted. And the thing was, 20 years ago, computers were unstable.
Right.
And we're not trusted.
And so automatically, this was part of your routine. Right. Today, these machines are like paper.
Right. Which is still a fallacy.
It's still a fallacy, but that's the way these guys see it.
Right.
You know, and I'm looking at this going, okay, for me to recover you takes 2 days of my time.
Right.
In the meantime, you're going to be complaining that you don't have a machine to run to.
Right.
All right, well, you can use the iMac, you can use the other G5, you can use that's fine.
Right.
But the other thing is that they're now on laptops.
Right.
We've migrated everybody to that because they use less power. Right. They have a screen that's integrated.
Right.
They think they're cooler because it has the word pro in it. I don't know.
Right.
All that stuff. So, but it's also, no, there's also another reason to have laptops, and that is that if they have to go see a client, they just pick up and go. You know, they're on their way. You can't do that with a Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So in the old days, I did corporate backup too. I was an IT guy for design firm. So this was way back when, you know, I had a 750 megabyte drive, and that was
a big drive.
That was a big drive.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, using Retrospect and you know, 8mm tape and.
Which, by the way, is not a very reliable backup storage medium.
Back then, was all I had for the
price. And back then, that's what most people had.
But everyone had desktop machines, and it was easy. Just all I said was, keep it on. Then, you know, it was easy to remember. But laptops are harder. Now, Retrospect's has done some smart things with that, right? It's, it polls for people entering the network.
It says, you're here? I'm going to start backing up.
Right? Yeah.
But being, you know, the kids being the kids, they see that running, and they're like, well, that's annoying, and that's they shut down the process.
Right, right.
You know, and unless you have a way of killing the cancel button,
right?
But then even then they force quit,
right?
They're like, I'm not. I need my.
So what you need to do is walk up to them one day when they're working, and just gently take the computer off their desk and say, "What would you do right now if someone's ripped you off in the street with your laptop.
That's the hard thing, is if a person hasn't experienced some sort of catastrophic loss. And anecdote we were talking about earlier that made me think of how much more trusted the things are now is my mom, when she went back to school, was using my Amiga and a very early version of WordPerfect to do her papers. And she was sort of nonchalant about her stuff until she lost two or three papers because just it was accident prone. It would crash.
The idea being that she's coming from a typewriter that had permanency.
Exactly. Right. But she very quickly, you have to have, it's almost like you need to simulate catastrophic data loss for somebody. Like all your photos are gone, and let them just stew on that for a week.
So to put that in perspective, all of your photos. Because you've moved to a digital camera and you've been shooting this way for the last 5 years.
Right.
So think about that.
And where are your CDs?
The trip to Mount Rushmore.
Right.
The trip to the river. The trip, to the space shuttle. Mm-hmm. Gone.
So what's the first thing you take? In the old days when we were kids, what's the first thing you take? People took in a fire. They took their box of pictures. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, now the modern day equivalent, at least in my household, is I take the backup drives. That'll be the first thing I grab because that's where the photos are. So it's the same thing. But the good news is I happen to have a backup drive, of the photos that if I can get to it, if that room isn't burning, I can grab it and I will take that first.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And I think that's the thing about backing up that, you hit it right on the head, John, is that people don't realize how much of their life they've put in the box. And Ben's saying the same thing too. Say, we put our lives here. And if you don't think about it, I'm getting a little preachy, but you don't think about that, and if it goes away, you've lost all that information.
Well, I've been working on this book for the last. It's not really a book, but it is in the shape of book. In the end, it's a book about podcasting, and it's my experience as I've gone. I've done this for the last 2.5 years.
Right.
Okay. It's in a folder. It's a bunch of files. It's a bunch of things, and eventually, that's going to get organized into book. But
that goes.
At one point. Mm-hmm. There was a in time. The mm-hmm. only copy of it was on a PowerBook, and it was like, "What the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm pouring my life into this, and if I lose these experiences, there I can't recreate them.
Right, right.
It's never the same way the second time.
Right.
So, I mean, I think I'll agree that our lives are here, and this is this way. I mean, simple tactics, I think. How do people do this? Because that's the question I get all the time is that, I know I need to back up, but I don't know what solution to use, and I don't know what software is best, and I don't know, do I do it to hard drive, or do I burn it to disks?
I'm going to start with the first part of this answer. Mm-hmm. There is no best.
Right.
Okay.
I agree with
but
that.
But you have mm-hmm. to do something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Download something.
Download something and start using it.
Do something.
See what you don't like about it.
Well, and a survey of software. You did a survey of backup software, right? And how many backup apps did you find?
36 apps.
Right. So 36
some of
apps.
Them are obsolete. Mm-hmm. Some of them are active. But this was the quickie search.
Right.
Finding 36 backup solutions for Mac OS X. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't include the ones that were for OS 9.
Right.
And I mean, I think you bring up perfectly, Ben, is that it's not for lack of software, right?
No, it's lack of it. It's first understanding, which I think everyone is making clear. And then that's a matter of, okay, what works for you?
Right.
What software works for you and what strategy works for you?
Making it convenient enough that you'll actually do it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is that folks, it's for whatever reason, either the software they've found or the not being able to conceptualize what it is they need and how to get it into that. They know they need to back up.
Yeah, this is the problem is that it's still kind of a geeky IT task.
Mm-hmm.
And IT does not mean it. It means information technology.
Right.
Right.
And so it's, making sure that the cable's plugged in, making sure that the script is running, the thing. And the hugest problem is this. So let's say that you do make a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Right.
Your computer gets horked.
Right.
You have a missing window on your car, and even worse, it's the missing laptop that was in the car.
Right.
Why you left it there in the first place is beyond me, but okay.
mm-hmm.
Now what do we do?
Right.
And so part of that backup strategy is trying to understand if your backup is going to actually be able to do something for you.
Exactly. So I'm always in a state of mind of if my laptop disappears right now, you know, how am I sitting at this exact moment?
Okay. Right.
So I do two states.
Okay.
I do a full-on, complete clone backup. Or it's not even a backup. It's a clone.
Okay.
Every day.
So
there's my hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And there's a number of pieces of software that do that we talk about. And then concurrently, I do ongoing backups of just the data files that I'm working on.
Okay.
So that's my particular strategy. So it's two different programs. It happens to be on, in my wife's case, OneDrive, which isn't the safest. But hey, to get her to cooperate in
that's
this,
all you could get.
Is I'm doing pretty good if she's just going to plug in the hard drive.
Right.
And I've got it all automated. Or I actually go in and do it manually when we go to bed.
Right. You're the elf that
keeps I'm the elf that keeps it going. You're the IT she doesn't know about. Right. But, but when it crashes. So anyway, so the clone is, for that very reason that you talked about, that if a laptop goes, you've got an absolute snapshot of where you last backed up.
And you can plug that practically into anything.
You buy your new Mac, you reload it onto the drive, and it's you know, the system's there, the apps are there, all your preferences. It's just exactly the way you left it.
And I think that's something different for people that come over from the PC world. And I knew I dealt with this in the PC world all the time when I was doing PC, more IT support there, is that you can't do that with a PC as well, because you have to have the drivers that are for this one and the OS flavor for this piece of hardware and all that.
It's that's more cumbersome. Yeah, you end up with some sort of... Well, you can do it. You just end up with some sort of boot media that is usually specific to the backup software. So like a Cronus is one that people use a lot on Windows side.
And
you've got... it's like booting into the... what do you call it? Your OS disk if you need to recover on a Mac, too. So you boot into that, and it bootstraps a little OS that's just enough to say, I'm going back from this file to this hard drive.
I have recent experience of trying to recover a one machine to another machine on a Windows machine. I was amazed at how difficult it was.
Yeah, right.
It's all, I almost wanted to say, dude, your data's gone.
Yeah,
because it was that much. It seemed to be that much of a pain, and then I was like, "Oh, well, I could just use this tool." But typical of this, when you ask the question, there are thousands of answers,
right.
And so it's just, you know, finding the right.
Well, and I think, I mean, you're what I would consider one of the better backup people I know. Mm-hmm. You do a full image.
It's almost freaky how much you back up.
And because I've lost data.
Right. Yeah.
I've done the same thing too. I don't back up quite the same way you do, but I back up a lot myself.
Yeah.
The thing that when I teach people backup, and it's something that maybe we haven't quite talked about yet, is, and you kind of alluded to it, John, is the strategy of how you think about it. So for example, one of the things I tell people a lot of times, don't just throw files on the main level of your hard drive if you're not going to back up your entire drive. If you're just backing up your home directory, which in the new Mac OS, that's pretty much that's where most people's lives is, in that main directory. So if they at least
except for the old school people that still double click their hard drive.
Right. No, and I agree with that. But that's why I tell old school people, don't do that anymore, because if you're really going to have a backup strategy and you're not going to back up your entire hard drive, you're really worried about your photos, your music, and your documents, which is what most people are, and your mail. And
it's going to go in business. It's contacts, mail,
right,
links.
But the thing I found with business anymore is that most of the business guys don't ask me this anymore, because they do have IT groups, so they have it on a server and they resynchronize. So it's the individual home user that a lot more questions for anymore, because they're the ones that are like, I don't have an IT support department.
Right.
I don't have a server somewhere. What do I do? And so that's why I tell them, it's like, just get a drive that at least backs up your home directory. Make sure you don't put any files that are important to you except in your home directory.
So as you know, we're talking about brain dead automatic.
Right.
If you install OS 10.5 on your old machine, or you buy a brand new machine, at the same time you buy that new shiny box with the DVD in it, spend $500. No, excuse me, spend $100 and get whatever external hard drive.
Match the size of your internal one at home.
Get it bigger than...
Say bigger, and if you can, double.
Yeah, exactly. But at least match it.
Minimum. You want to have a little more.
The thing is that MacBook there has 120 gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Next to, you know, and it's being backed up automatically to a 500 gig hard drive.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't think about it anymore. It's... Mm-hmm. time machine, it just does it.
Now, the thing people have to understand about time machine, and you know, we're talking about automatic sync, and time machine is that automatic sync now. And that's one of the major reasons to upgrade 10.5. But you have to initiate that first sync, which is letting it happen overnight, especially if you've migrated data or you've upgraded your system. And it does have to be a nice, beefy hard drive. And that's the big thing. But as soon as you do that, just leave that hard drive on or make sure that the hard drive is turned on when you turn your computer on, and it's so it can do those backups for you. Otherwise, it's not doing you any good with Time Machine.
So the full clone is for the case of the complete loss of the computer. And the one thing that Time Machine does not do is it does not make the clone. So we've got two distinctions here.
I thought Carbon Copy Cloner had a timer.
Well, it does. Well, but there's different strategies we're talking about here. I'm talking about just the strategy of your home directory first.
The distinction's a good one to make, because a lot of folks think, oh, I've got all my data because I have that documents folder that I've got everything, and they forget about all their application preferences or the types of data that don't live under there.
Or the apps that came pre-installed even sometimes.
Right. So a clone machine is literally that drive that you're making the clone of. You could boot another machine with that drive, and that machine will look exactly like yours. So it's an absolute clone. And so in my strategy, I want that because I just want that simplicity. It's really a question of time. Do I want to reinstall all of my apps? Do I want to reinstall system? Which takes, you know, a good day. Mm-hmm. And that means if you've got your disks around, if you've got your serial numbers in order, and you know, you've got to rebuild your preferences and such. So to me, that's
downloading all the updates again. I mean, the further you are along from a major OS release, then there's all the downloading for it to catch up.
Yeah. Well, here's a good example. All the stuff that I buy online, you know, from shareware. It comes in, it's in the email folder, in an email, and I pull that to a folder called serial numbers.
Yeah.
Well, guess what happens if I lose my hard drive?
You lose the serial numbers.
All the serial numbers are gone. So it's like, oh, wow, that's a really
dumb thing. That was a dumb idea. Yeah. So let's talk about these cloning apps. So there's a few apps that do it, and many of them will do it
on schedule. And these are full clones we're talking about.
These are full clones. So this is like strategy one, which I think is really important. Hmm. So you've got Carbon Copy Cloner, which is a free app, I believe.
Mm-hmm. If you pay for it, you do get some extra features.
Okay. It's Nagware now.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's Super Duper. Mm-hmm. Which I use.
Dumb name.
The only reason I don't like it is that it's a very important function that has a really cartoony name. So you just still you got to take it seriously, even though they call it Super Duper.
Super Duper's great.
Yeah, it's a great app. As well. Yeah, and there's another app called Deja Vu, which is more of a it's just a preference pane, but it does a similar thing. Mm-hmm. So all these will do similar things where you can create a clone. You can put them on timers. I actually don't put them on timers. Automatic stuff like that for a clone doesn't quite make as much sense for me.
For you, but for I think a lot of users it might.
It might.
Yeah, a lot of people go home at 5 o'clock. You know, as everyone has seen, the office is now empty.
Yeah,
and that you know that guy and that guy and that guy have all left at a specific time.
Yeah,
and so there's no reason why.
Sure.
That 6 o'clock rolls around and that drive is now grinding its backup. Right.
So with all these programs, the initial backup, of course, is going to take a long time because it's going to back up your entire drive. But all these also have an incremental thing, which means that it will replace what's old with what's new. And so that doesn't take very long after you do the incremental one.
The other strategy that goes with this is that you want to make sure that stuff that you delete is deleted from your backup.
Yeah, if you choose to do that.
If you're doing a true clone.
If you're doing a true clone, have it delete out as well. And that's my strategy. The true clone means that it's just I don't have any older files on there.
Right.
And that means that whatever volume you use to back up with, whether it's an external hard drive or a partition of an external hard drive, you could pretty much match the size of your initial hard drive or maybe make it a little bit bigger.
Yep.
And you always know you're never going to exceed that because
your laptop is
only going to be that size.
Right.
So a lot of these programs like Deja Vu and I think Carbon Copy Clone, you can have 5 or 6 days worth of old stuff kept on. To me, that gets a little too confusing. Mm-hmm. That's where I go into strategy two.
Okay,
which would be in addition to the daily backup, then I have the incremental backup of just data. So this is just the user folder that Kenji was talking about.
Mm-hmm. And that one, for a lot of people, that alone is the one that if you just can do any basic that backups. That's the one that for most people, that's where their heart in essence is at, is sure. those files.
So everything that we've talked about so far, mm-hmm. super duper carbon copy mm-hmm. cloner, can also manage those incrementals.
Right.
No. Mine don't live super. You probably could. They're carbon, not really designed for that.
For carbon copy cloner, you can say, here's the path that I want you to back up.
It'll do an incremental clone.
Yeah.
Right. But not. It's not really designed for, I just want to back up this folder. Like, I just want to back up. So it probably does, but
yeah, and I would suggest, it's not one I would suggest either. There's several other apps. For example, if we want to go down strategy too.
Yeah.
And again, this is precluding if, now for strategy two, Time Machine.
Time Machine is awesome.
OS 10 and you set up Time Machine, you actually have probably one of the coolest backup systems because it lets you roll back through time.
Right.
So that's one of the distinctions I also want to make there is that a lot of backup programs will overwrite your files. Mm-hmm. So your data is only as good as that last backup. With Time Machine, it is multiple time sliced backup, meaning that I can go to a certain point in time and see changes, and I can go back further in that time and see a different version of that file. So it's actually versioning backup.
Right. But it's not terribly confusing, which is great.
Which is why Time Machine is an amazing piece of
software. Because that can be an incredibly confusing thing if you don't have the interface that they built.
The only problem with Time Machine is that if you lose your drive, your machine, you can't just automatically plug in and get back to zero.
It takes a little while.
It takes
a little rebuild the data because it's parsing out the data in different ways.
And I agree with that. So, but then there's a lot of apps where you can do just pure data backing up.
Right.
And the one I've used for a long time is called ChronoSync because it is an automated one. I can have synchronizations go on. Plus, a strategy I use because I want to make sure that my machine's data, not just backed up, but my machine data is in sync. So my desktop data is in sync with my laptop, especially when I'm doing a lot of traveling or work remotely, is I use ChronoSync to check the data versions between my hard drive, that's my portable hard drive, my laptop data, if it's on my laptop, and my home system. And that's one of the things why that one, and so there's a couple others out there that will do that too.
Right.
I just happen to use ChronoSync because I've used it for quite a while.
ChronoSync 3.3, they've updated it to be...
It's full Leopard compatible.
Full Leopard compatible.
Yep. Right.
It's shareware. It's $30.
So that one, that's also part of my triad. Mm-hmm. So it's super duper Time Machine and ChronoSync.
Handles move files, handles rename files, handles deleted files, detects conflicts, copies files safely. How else can you copy a file? Deletes copies files safely, verifies data, logs all actions, sends email confirmations.
Yeah.
For the automated parts,
So you can know, you know, while you're away, sent to your iPhone, hey, you're backed up, dude.
Yep.
Good, I can sleep.
Right.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, if you're going to do that incremental, I mean, ChronoSync, Time Machine, but even backup. If you have .Mac, you get backup, which is a backup piece of software.
Yeah, but a lot of people have complained about backup over the years, and rightly so, but the new version is actually
quite good.
Not horrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, the thing with when I say not horrible, a lot of people have an idea of how something ought to be. And because backup isn't flexible that way, it's like, here, it'll back up your whole user folder. It'll back up your dates and times and contacts. It'll do some things. And it's kind of like you go to the deli and you get a ham sandwich, and the guy will only make it the one way. There's no options.
Right.
And that can be kind of...
So even what we've just talked about, too, is there's a little bit of complexity there in that we've just described the clones, which give you the snapshot, but have the side effect of if you've deleted something on A, it doesn't make it to B, or it gets deleted on your...
Right.
As you overwrite your copy of B. Then there's the incrementals to save your history, and then there's syncing, which is... Yeah, so it's no wonder to a certain degree that folks sometimes just throw up their hands and it's...
Right.
So if we were to choose, if someone was going to only do one of these, they can't get their head around, or they don't want to spend the time to get their head around all three, what would you say?
Super duper.
At least clone do. It. Just at least
clone it every night. It's not hard.
I'm going to be on the other side of the table and say Time Machine.
Okay.
Because then you don't have to buy anything. And
you have to buy a hard drive.
Okay. You don't have to buy any additional software.
Right.
And you don't have to think about it. It's just there.
And I will say that I started using Time Machine on my desktop home system. And,
Right.
When you understand the power that's there, and that you can go back and do this versioning and all that. It's really great solution. It's one of the big reasons, really, you know, I harp on it, and a lot of people do, but it's one of the reasons to move the new OS.
All right, so we have to talk about some more details of backing up.
Right.
And that is that if you are backing up to a single device, that's a pretty scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've got two copies, which is better than one.
Which two copies?
Infinitely
better than that. But we already outlined the possibility, you know, of how the backup disappeared and the file disappeared, and now you have nothing.
Right.
The old school backup is that you have an A and a B.
Yes.
And that you back up on the even weeks to A, and you back up to the odd weeks to B.
Mm-hmm.
And that A and B get moved to physical other places.
Yes.
And so the thinking is that one backup might get destroyed, but two is going to be pretty tough to destroy.
Especially if one of them is offsite.
Yeah.
So this is the whole insurance thing. This is Lloyd's of London doing, you know, what's your risk assessment and what's your risk profile? Right.
Do you know the joke about the scientist? This is back in the 60s when he could actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
He calculated the odds of while he was flying that there would be a bomb on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought those odds were pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't quite like that. And being the traveler that he was, he decided that if he carried his own bomb, that his odds of having two bombs on the plane would go up considerably.
Okay.
So using the same statistics as the bomb,
okay,
you can't carry a bomb on a plane anymore. This is why I'm on the no-fly list, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Not because I carried a bomb, because I told this joke.
Yes.
the odds of losing one, you know, losing this backup to and your main drive is pretty low,
mm-hmm.
You know, within 365 plus MT, mean time between failures, and,
right,
you know, on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But to have two devices have that same problem,
mm-hmm.
Right. Especially if you buy them at different times so that they're not in the same manufacturing build, mm-hmm. so that you have a little bit of difference going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so the rotating backup is, I mean, I also use, I didn't mention it because it got a little more complex.
Sure.
But I do that for my clones. I rotate backup. So I have an A and a B clone.
Okay.
So I have 1 days ago disk if I wanted. But
oh, so you're rotating on the day?
On the day. I'm just doing it on the day. So that way, now I've got, you know, if my backup from that day crashes and my hard drive crashes, at least I only have 1 days of data lost.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm also doing Time Machine on yet another drive,
uh-huh.
So that day's data is there on Time Machine.
So you basically so here's the thing: you've got A, B, and C going.
Well, yeah, and some more, but yes,
yeah,
right,
and DNF.
I have DNF too, but that's we won't.
So we were looking at some things that are actually really cool, and this idea of Amazon giving us a cloud that we can put stuff in.
Yeah,
right.
And
it's like a super iDisk.
Yeah, super iDisk.
Mm-hmm.
And iDisk, by the way, is
works,
you know,
pretty well
works pretty well too.
Yeah.
The thing is that if you have a lot of stuff,
it doesn't work that way.
The iDisk,
you only
the .Mac is kind of costly.
10 gigs and that's split between your mail and your storage. You can buy an additional 10 gigs for $49.95 a year and 20 gigs, ooh, so you get a total of 30 for another 100. So it's $200 a year,
that's
which
a
means...
Lot.
That's a lot. Well, okay.
So I figured it out.
Yeah.
The base cost of .Mac is about 83 cents a month per gigabyte of storage
at
the low end. If you buy the additional amount, it does drop in price, so it costs $200 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you go for the top end,
yeah,
you get 30 gigs, and it's approximately 55 cents a gig per month.
Okay.
The Amazon system, which is their
storage service, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a web service that allows you, it's very generic storage. It's blobs of data, mm-hmm. that have a tag.
Yeah, sit out
have
in
an
space.
ID, and they just sit there on Amazon's farm, and you buy into this at the price of, what is it? It's 15 cents per gigabyte month of storage. So for every gigabyte, yes, you're paying 15 cents a month to store it up there.
That's very reasonable.
And then you pay a little bit for data transfer too. You pay 10 cents per gigabyte. So the stuff going, if you have a lot of in and out, you have to consider those costs too.
But and actually, I figured out the number at which the price no longer becomes economical, which is if you go over a terabyte, basically as soon as you exceed a terabyte of transfer in a month, then it becomes very expensive.
Interesting.
Just as a general rough number. Yeah. And they might have changed their numbers, but since when I did, it was about a terabyte.
For the services for Beer School, MacBreak Tech, and what's the other show that I do that's I don't pay for that bandwidth. but we pay roughly $20 a month for 8 gigs. Excuse me, for 8 terabytes of bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about bandwidth, okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting that if you exceed that, that it becomes cost prohibitive.
Yeah. So if you're, because you can use the S3 system for a lot of things, but what we're talking about, what Ben's alluding to, is this big cloud, and you get this great storage space out there.
And the problem with it is that it's pretty geeky. It's geeky and low level, and it's meant to be that. It's a service that they anticipate people are going to build things on top of, and already you start to see it happening. Jungle Disk is the one that Kenji uses.
Jungle Disk basically makes S3 into almost like an iDisk for your Mac.
Oh, nice.
Right.
Because I was looking at Mac Fuse, which is the make anything into a file system readable on a Mac or Windows machine or Linux. It's a really cool project, but it seems that the S3 plugin for Mac Fuse or for Fuse in general is a bit stagnant. Like a bunch of people were really excited about it, and they're like, I don't think we want to work on this.
Right.
It's almost as if the Amazon kids should provide that plugin for Fuse.
People are writing all sorts of stuff. There's Python plugins. What is the Transmit?
Transmit.
Well, now we'll have S3 as one of the targets. So you can treat it like an FTP server used to using Transmit for your back and forth. Just plug it into S3 instead.
And Transmit is shareware, so you have to pay for it. I don't remember if CyberDuck will do it. I'll actually check. CyberDuck's the free FTP program.
I don't know if it does S3 yet, but I'm sure it's around the bend. Right. A lot of people are going to start using this sort of stuff.
But the advantage is that
it's offsite.
It's offsite. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing, because I have a friend that works at Amazon, all their data is triple redundant. Meaning that I think it would have to be three data centers would have to fail for you to lose all your data that's backed up into the S3 system.
Right. And they're spread across the country.
And they're spread out. Yeah, it's geographically spread out too. Right. So it would have to be like a massive disaster.
Geographically desirable.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So keeping in mind for these offsite web backups, they're very much slower, obviously, than your hard drive backup. So the first backup, again, if you're doing these large bits of data. Now I think that's actually a smart idea for people's photos and music is to use these services because, like I say, in a fire, that's the first thing people want to grab.
Yeah.
And it's almost always new stuff coming in after the big initial upload.
After the big initial upload.
A trickle
upload,
of new stuff coming in, but no changes or very few changes.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So I think I'll do that for my wife's photos is get an offsite, maybe this S3 thing, or even just work on my iDisk, which is lots of room.
Just get them off somewhere. The idea is
even a drive at a friend's house. Yeah. Take that second backup drive that you can do once a week. Take
or
it
burn
to
a DVD once in a while. Don't burn CDs. We decided that CDs aren't going to last the lifetime that everybody wants them to.
Cost per actual storage. DVDs are way cheaper.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is that a DVD is just, because of the way it's manufactured, it's just better protected.
It's higher quality.
It's a higher standard of data.
It'll survive the EMP pulse, too. Your drives will not survive.
CD. Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but there's a lot of disadvantage. I mean, they're slow. Mm-hmm. You've got to label them. You've got to index them.
Saying that it's the once in a while kind of thing. It's like the January 1st, we're going to throw away all the old magazines thing. In this case, you burn the DVD and
of
you
your
put
photo.
It,
okay.
Of the photos.
Put another part of the house.
Yeah, my dad does something like that. He takes, when he is basically, I forget what the time frame is, but at a certain point, he just takes a set of photo. And one of the nice features in iPhoto, if you use it as your photo manager, is go in and burn that album to a disc. He burns it, then it puts it off on the disc, and then it's backed
up. This is the issue. When you start thinking about backups and redundancy and losing things, the single disc, sure, it's not going to get lost. It may get destroyed. It may get burned. It does that. So at some point you go, this isn't really a good backup. What happens if I lose this disk? So then you get paranoid about that. You're like, putting more than one of something somewhere.
Oh, for the archiving?
Yeah.
So this now this is archiving. So this is yet another
subcategory. Yeah, this is yet the other subcategory of this.
So stuff that's off your drive. It's off old your stuff drive, you don't
want
to live.
It might be the only copy of it ever.
No, right? I never have one copy of data.
I understand that, but I'm
so
just
saying. So I have, like, for every archive drive, there's a clone of that in my world.
Disk space is so cheap. The way I've gotten my kept this simple, because I won't follow something if it's not simple enough for me, is I'm going to be a data pack rat. There's no such thing as an archive anymore. Mm-hmm. I upgrade. I'm now on a set of 1 terabyte drives, and everything's there. And as I...
Are they RAID 5s, or are they...
No, they're 2 RAID 0 1 terabyte external drives.
I see.
Yeah, and so I have a routine to get stuff on there, and I've got some offsite as well. But the idea being that it's just going to all stay with me, because
that's
to me, the cataloging, I can't get my head around spending the time on that. Speaking of metadata entry and all that stuff.
Right. No, you make a good point, is that it's... Just keep getting bigger drives. They're getting cheaper.
There's 1 terabyte drives worth. I think they were three something at Costco a couple months ago.
Right.
So to put this in perspective, the very, very first 9 gig disk array that I bought, actually I had to make it, was made out of 2 4.5 gig Micropolis drives. And these Micropolis drives were this thick. And they had, I want to say...
Those things were like tanks.
They had like 10 platters in them. Yeah. I mean, there was a whole ton of platters in this thing. I kept one just because it's so cool to open it up, and because it had failed for the last time. But those drives cost $1,500 a piece. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the nearest, and I made my own RAID because to buy a RAID from somebody was going to cost $6,000.
Right.
I just couldn't fork over that much money. But anyway, I got this. I made this. This case, and I put these in, and you know, I had all kinds of heat problems and all kinds of other stuff with that. But when people talk about something being really expensive, I always remember back to that time when I had those 2 drives that cost, a trip to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Exactly.
That system breaks down, of course, if your overall data set is larger than a single drive can handle. You know, if I had to have 4 drives because my total amount of data pack rat stuff was, more than a terabyte, that becomes a problem. And I could foresee that happening as people start to accumulate more media. That's the big thing.
Well,
video
it'll happen,
especially.
But you'll just get a 2 terabyte drive and just move the 1 terabyte onto there.
Yeah, hopefully the growth of my
your data
media
versus,
is an outpace, the march of technology as far as
this,
the storage
this
goes.
Well, this goes back to the thing we talked about in one of the very first discussions that we had, which was about ZFS.
Right.
And ZFS allows for the cloud to grow and get big and and deal with the fact that the... it deals with the premise that something is going to fail,
right?
Be it a power supply, be it a drive, be it the data itself becomes not good on the drive,
right?
So it's dealing with those three huge premises. Like, I'm always going to need more storage. The things have to be looked over to make sure that the data is still good, and that it's all going to fail catastrophically at some point.
Yeah.
Most spectacularly, in fact.
Right, and that's another basic premise that should have been brought out at the beginning. Is it's usually the first thing people say is it's not a question of if your drive is going to fail; it's a question of when. And that's not a joke. That's actually true.
And it's every one of these things, except for this microphone. This microphone is the thing that's never going to fail unless there's a nuclear war,
right?
Because then it'll get it EMP'd out. Speaking of EMP'd, but every one of these things that's in front of us has a mean time between failures.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's calculated to know that this will fail after 25,000 hours.
Right.
And when you think, 25,000 hours, that's a lot. Well, take 25,000 hours, divide it by 24, divide it by,
365,
and then you get this number that's less than 3 years.
Yeah.
And especially with a hard drive, they're cost reducing these things every year. I mean, I can go down to the collection, and the hard drives used to be really heavy about a decade ago, and now they're really light.
Yeah, right.
So they're not built the same way. Probably a good thing, because they're probably not as heat sensitive, and they're and they've learned to use the metals that aren't going to contract and expand, and you know the simplification of the thing makes it so that it won't fail
liquid
as
bearings.
Easily. Yeah, liquid bearings.
So we're still on a little bit about offsite. There was an interesting app/program called Crash Plan. They're at Macworld last year. They'll probably be there again next week. It's a basically it's an application you can buy for $30. They have a $60 one as well that allows you to do offsite backups. And the idea is that you go to a you use a friend's house or a friend's place. You maybe drop a computer on there or you drop a hard drive on their network, and then using a crash plan, it will do the incremental backups to that offsite server. And it has automated capabilities. And so you're using your own network and your friend's network
right.
to do it. But it's an interesting idea. It's really cheap. I mean, the software is $30.
Right.
Now you have to buy the drive and possibly you tag an old, maybe you put an old G5 in their house or an old, even an
G5s
old
G5s are still useful.
Okay, it's an old G4 iMac and put on a 500 gig drive, put on their network somewhere.
Yep,
and they do the same with you, right? And then you just basically you have this overnight, or they have one. They have a professional version that's an incremental by the minute backup as well as you work along. And so that's another. Now this is not a clone. This is just data,
but again, it's as we kind of talked about. It's one of the big things for a lot of people: their photos, their email, all that
right.
stuff.
rsync.net is another one of these services. It's sort of geared towards business folks, but their model is is that you pay, again, like the Amazon thing. Theirs is a little more expensive. It's $1.60 per gigabyte per month, and it scales down depending on how much that you're going to put up there. But from there, you can use any sort of standard tool to get it. You can map it as an external drive. You can use rsync. You can use FTP programs.
I forgot to talk about rsync.
Oh, yeah. We should
I was just yawning about that, because it's a command line tool.
It's the old school way of doing your data backup.
It's super flexible. It can talk between machines really easily, so it's been a part of the Unix platform forever.
Is it a command or is it a protocol?
It's a command. It's a program. There's a server side and a client side, but it can talk over SSH, so a lot of the times it's just logging into a remote server. If you're doing remote, it can do local to local as well, but if you're doing local to remote, it can log in as if you were logging in over SSH and the terminal, and then it does a smart synchronization where it'll even look at larger files and figure out which portions of the file have changed and only transfer those. It's really good at bandwidth anemic situations where it needs to get a lot of stuff synced, but you don't want to just throw it all out there again.
Yep. So the cool thing about rsync is that there's a bunch of GUI tools that go with it now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to remember the incantations.
You don't have to be a Unix
dash R dash M dash question mark dash dash whatever.
You mean dash RVT double dash progress double dash whole file double dash size only?
Yes,
something
exactly.
like that.
You think he uses it?
don't use that recipe. Don't.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's my favorite backup command of all time.
No, don't say it.
No.
Everybody,
John.
Just insert the joke. You know what the joke is.
Now.
Don't go there.
Yeah, my favorite backup tool.
Say it.
So now,
it totally fixes all the problems.
As far as social networking of things, though, my friend Doris, who a bunch of us actually know, suggested why not get together and have a backup party?
That's a great idea.
Have a social event where you get together with people you haven't seen in a while, have them bring their computers, bring hard drives. Because backups, especially the first time, take a long time.
Right.
You just set up a bunch of power strips, set your computers up, back it up, have some cocktails.
That's the weirdest LAN party that I've ever heard.
That's great. It's so geeky. I love it.
Yeah.
You can have your metadata party while the
backup party's going on.
Oh, my God. That's a little too much at once. No. Especially to start drinking once the backup starts. Then
true.
Well, see, I'm going to have Alberta do a backup cocktail.
See, the thing is the backup could be used in the case of data loss.
Yes.
In either case.
It can be used for good and for, forgetting.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, make some distinctions also about the actual data that's involved in these backups. And we talked about these different strategies. We talked about the cloning. We talked about incremental. And then we also talked about synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's you know, with just if you don't do a clone, you obviously don't have your system files, and you don't have all the things that you know. The clone is an actual rebootable
thing, everything,
right? And it's the actual file. So if you look at your hard drive that you've done with SuperDuper, for instance, it looks like you see files, you see folders, you see everything there.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, with synchronization, like with Chronosync, it also does the same thing. It copies files to files. It looks alike.
Mm-hmm.
In these other programs, if you actually go into the guts of it, they don't do it the same thing.
Right.
So programs like Time Machine, like Backup, they're doing a compressed...
They're black box.
And they're sort of black boxy. So that's also a consideration when you want to do a restoration or when you have a failure. You know, how much time is it going to take to get that back? Because with Time Machine... Now, Time Machine's brilliant because it has the GUI that you can actually pull and drag.
You can search through time. You can search for dates, all that kind of stuff.
So. But the actual... If you actually look at the data files that it makes... They're just little blobs of data that are it's a data soup.
Well, because they're compressing, they're doing all kinds of things.
They're compressing it down to save on disk space.
It's mostly just a bunch of links. They copy everything the first time, and then as you make changes to given files, they're making a whole copy of that of the folder hierarchy again, but just linking back to the original files for anything that hasn't changed. And actually making a full copy again of anything that's changed.
Okay.
So that's the. But again, you don't want to have to interact with it at that files and folders level.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what the magic of the GUI is, of being able to scrub back and forth over time.
But programs like Retrospect, for instance, had to have their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you just if you back up using them, you can't just go in and
grab
drag
a single
it back.
File.
You have to go
historically.
Through.
Historically, as great. A sleep at night kind of thing. It was always a pain to get a file off of it.
Yeah, one file takes forever.
Yeah, because it's got to grind through tapes and it's got to do all this.
Right.
And and even when we were doing Retrospect, not from the tapes, but to a backup drive.
Yeah,
or it was a really big drive.
Right.
It still took forever. I mean, someone said, "Hey, I need the file from like 4 days ago."
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll get you that. And then it'll be the next day when I get it back.
Well, and the funny thing about that is my friend Eric, who he pretty much most of his IT career, he has worked at literally the upper echelons of doing backups. He worked for Microsoft. He's worked for GoDaddy. He's worked for a bunch of companies doing nothing but backup engineering. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And
I want to make a joke about GoDaddy backing.
I won't even go there. Cause
I know. I want to make that joke, but I'm not going to.
What's interesting about that is he said that for IT guys who think they're being safe by using anything with the top quality tapes to do tape backups, he says, you are mistaken. He said through his career, had to go back to your old tapes. And the oxides, because of the way tape works, eventually degrade very quickly. And there were times when he said a tape that was a year old, they could not get the data back off. And this guy whose entire career has been doing data backup as IT for the most part.
Yeah.
And he said it's not easy. So he said if you think you have backups at a corporate level and you're using a tape system, those backups are your last resort backups.
Yeah. So I'm going to go one further on this because I used to do stuff with tape and because it was slow. And that it was very expensive, so I decided I was going to move projects to hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
When I would do a hard drive backup, or we'd do a project, we'd pull the drive out of the Mac and put it in a new one, and then label that drive. And it was went on the shelf down in Virtual Fries, which is basically this climate controlled closet that you can get. Never gets hot in there.
Mm.
So I'm looking for an old project that was about 5 years old. So I find the drive and I plug it in, and the drive goes click, 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 click. Click.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're like, all right. So I heat it up because I'm thinking, okay, well,
Stiction.
It's, you know, just the lubricant. So I get the drive to kind of work, and I'm able to get the file off it. But then I'm curious, like, so what are the condition of the other drives? So I start going through this pile of drives from 5 years. Most of the drives from 5 years before had failed. They would not spin up.
Wow.
And as I moved forward in time, I found that it was 50% more likely that the drive was, so from last year's point of view, that drive had a 50% chance of failing.
1 year old?
1 year old. It had just not being, it was just idle.
Yeah.
Right? So I go, so if I had two drives, one or the other may or may not work. If I go back 3 years, that was another 25%. If you go back 4 years, there was a 100% chance that that drive was going to fail.
Wow. That's sort of where backups meet, you know, Heisenberg, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you, if you haven't restored the backup, is it really there?
Yeah.
Right.
And so it, it was just this, this crazy thing. And I'm like, so the rule has, so I did, I still do backups to drives and I store them. But I have a program where I bring the drives and spin them up and make sure that they're still there.
Right.
Because, and then those drives haven't failed since, even though they're multi-years old.
And someone just told me that they had taken that suggestion of yours, but they did one step more. What they did is they actually bring the drives on, and they just bring a simple disk utility and just do a verify on the disk because it touches all the data across the drive. Yeah. So, and I thought, he's not even doing a repair. He's just doing a verify.
Well, see, that's the whole ZFS approach that this thing is going and looking
doing
at
it
the
in
data
real time
and moving the data from one place to the other to make sure that it's still fresh.
Right.
I was shocked, actually, because I thought, oh yeah, this is like, they're hermetically sealed, I'm not going to have this problem, I'm going to be able to have this, you know, go back in 20 years and find this. That was wrong.
Wow.
Totally surprised by what I found.
Yeah.
There's no way to expect folks at the home level to necessarily do disaster recovery scenarios like you'd find at the corporate level, where you're taking your backups and you're restoring from them and saying, if we had to do this today, would it have worked? But it is worth suggesting that when you first get started with a backup routine, super duper, what have you, let it do its thing, and then go take a look. Look at the folder, look at the destination drive, look at the folders, poke around, see if the things that you're thinking
about. Don't modify it.
If you're going to do a clone,
mount the clone.
You got to make sure that the clone boots. If that's your expectation, then there you go. Now, so here's a scenario problem. Macs until recently did not boot from USB.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you could have USB 2 on your computer, on your Mac, and it wasn't going to boot from that drive.
Well, and it was probably the USB device also had to support that.
No, it's a recent Mac issue.
No, no, but I'm saying that there's USB devices that don't support booting also.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So maybe that was a Mac iPod issue. No, it was a USB. Anyway, short story long was that some devices just won't boot. So you get this thing and you're like, I got this USB 2 thing and it doesn't boot. So that does you zero good.
Yeah.
Kind of. You can clone it. Yeah, you have to clone
it. You can clone it back to something another else, drive, but if you can't boot from it, it doesn't work.
Right, right.
Right? So if your expectation is to have zero downtime, you got to make sure that you really have zero downtime.
Right.
And that means, you know, having tested it to have it be the correct thing.
Right. And that's one nice thing about SuperDuper is one of the options you can tell it to do is after the clone is reboot with the clone.
Yeah.
So what I do at night is I actually put a post-it on my screen saying, I'm booting from the backup, from the clone, so that I don't automatically start working on it because it's exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't want to be working on my clone all day and then, you know, accidentally.
Oh.
Yeah. So I put a stick, you know, post-it saying, this is your clone backup. So,
You know how weird that would be? So here's the thing.
Yeah.
You go and you do the switch boot, you know, because that's your routine the next day. And then you go boot from the internal drive. And then you're like, where's all my work?
Oh, totally. It's happened. Mm-hmm. It's happened with my wife.
Where's She's that like, email?
Where'd it go?
Where's that thing? I just saw it. It was here.
Right.
My movie is gone.
I've done that too, though.
Yeah. So that's why the post-it is really helpful. And one other thing, one other like little tip, because I am such a two copies of every data. It's like if I go like to my in-laws and I'm in, you know, their house, which doesn't have high-speed internet and, you know, it's really slow and I'm working on something that's really important. I've done some great work. I've only got one copy on my hard drive. I'm really nervous about it. So I bring along my portable compact flash reader and I'll take the card out of my camera, even plug it into this flash reader and just back up that tiny little data file onto a compact flash. I take this when I go to hotels. And it's just whatever work I've done that day, granted that it's small, obviously it's not video, but
That's where thumb drives are nice too.
And thumb drives, if you're just doing, you know, text or presentations or whatever, you know, just
back it up
that night and wait till you get home, and then you can do your full on thing.
In fact, it's one of the things I tell business people all the time. If you're going to do a presentation somewhere,
oh yeah,
put the PowerPoint on your thumb drive before you leave for the airport or wherever you're going.
Yep.
That way, if your computer fails at the client site, if they have a computer, you pop your thumb drive in and you still have
it. And odds are they'll have a computer.
Yeah.
All right.
That's why you should use your iPod as the presentation.
Doing that.
The iPhone. Well, yeah.
Well, remember the thing that I did called Cheap Note, right?
Yeah.
So Cheap Note, you have a folder full of pictures that are named zero through whatever, zero through however many there are. And you have to make sure you have enough trailing numbers so that so that they go in the right order.
Right.
But if you do Cheap Note, you do a Command A, do an open, it opens in preview, then you do screen or slideshow,
right.
And then you go click through, right? So a bunch of stills.
Right.
So Cheap Note to go is taking those same things and putting them on your iPod as pictures.
Right.
And then you hook up the video cable to it and you go click.
And you still have your presentation.
And you still have your presentation.
See.
Or if you want to practice it, you're sitting there at the wherever, and you're practicing with your slides on your on your iPod.
Mm-hmm.
Cheap Note and Cheap Note to go.
Yep. I think we need to write an Apple script to do that.
Why?
Or an automator.
Why?
Hmm?
Why?
You know, I want to just drop the presentation on it, have it generate that for me, and load it over to my iPod.
Sure, right. Mm-hmm. That would be easy to do. Or just export the slide or the presentation as stills, which would work too. All right. Well, I'm thinking pick something. There's some. Okay. So if you want to start with free, if you have OS 10.5, you have backup.
And Time Machine.
You have Time Machine. If you have .Mac on 10.3, 10.4, 10.5, you have backup.
Which is nicely offsite. I use backup to do the calendar and address book offsite as well.
And it'll do to hard drives and to
DVDs
and CDs. Mm-hmm. If you're totally cheap and you don't want to buy 10.5 or .Mac, rsync, the command line tool, will get you.
Or carbon copy cloners free.
Yeah, carbon copy cloners free. And then there's another one that's free. It's called, I have it right here. That's not it.
Super Duper's not free. It's like $30. It's
free,
totally worth it.
There's a program,
and it's not yet Leopard compatible. They're working on it. They're being very diligent about making sure it's compatible with Time Machine.
Here it is. So. It's a program called iBackup, and it has no charge.
Okay.
And it works with 10.3 through 10.5. If you want to get a tool to pay for, because you know, reassuringly expensive is always reassuring.
Right.
There's some programs. One of them is called Backup Simplicity. It costs, $30. Chronosync is $30. There's a program called Deja Vu, which is $24.95. Or for a household of Max, it's $10 more.
I've been using Deja Vu in the short term while Super Duper is being updated, and it's been working great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Carbon Copy Cloner has some nag to it, and Decimus has software called Sync, S-Y-N-K.
Excellent.
And they have three different versions that do different things. But they do a really good job of comparing themselves to Time Machine and why an image backup, incremental image, or image backup is better than an incremental backup.
I would argue they're both important.
They're both important.
Very different. I think we covered the distinctions.
Yeah, they're very different schools of thought.
So I will throw this out there. This is not, I do not by any means necessarily recommend this for people, but as one last cool little backup thing, if you don't want to go get a hard drive, you don't want to go burn a bunch of CDs, but you have a FireWire mini DV camera. There's a piece of software out there for both Mac and PC that will let you use your mini DV camera via FireWire and back up to your mini DV tapes up to 4 gigs of data, I think it is, or 12 gigs. Oh, no, up to 12 gigs of data almost, I think, on a single mini DV tape.
Right.
Yeah, don't want to give up tape based media.
Yeah, so and I will say the oxides actually on mini DV tapes are better than actually the oxides on actually some commercial level backup tapes.
All right, so then the last one, the last thing you can do is you can roll your own action in Automator You can say copy these files to this location, and then you can use iCal to back to trigger that.
All to schedule it.
Yeah, to schedule it. And then that way, if you have something like, for example, if you know you have one file
that has to be
backed up all the time, like your todo.txt file.
Right.
Right? Which, you know, who could live without their todo.txt? That needs to get backed up somewhere. And so that, you know, put it on your FTP server, put it on your .Mac account, have it email it to your to somewhere, you know, whatever that is. But, you know, use Automator to make that one thing go. And that would work in 10.4 or 10.5.
10.4, good buddy.
That's never come up in my head.
Really?
After all these years, this thing's been out for almost 3 years, and I've never, I've never made that association with 10.4. Yeah. Wow!
And it's too late.
It's over.
It's over. Oh well.
Wow.
Have we done it? I think we've done it.
I think we covered it all.
As much as.
We can for now.
You know, for now, right? We don't want to marathon this one.
Right.
We could, believe me.
We could do This Week in Media again.
Right. This Week in Backup.
But, you know, the thing is that don't go with nothing.
Absolutely don't go with nothing.
Go with something. Pick something.
Mm-hmm.
And
something is better than nothing.
Yeah, something is better than nothing. But I'm going to say that sometimes something is it could be nothing.
Yeah. Maybe we just... We might want to throw out our hard drive favorites just as, you know, actually what to get.
Yeah.
So
stay away from and or buy.
Yeah.
We've talked about it on a lot of shows before.
So yeah, I'll just do the buy for G-Tech.
Okay.
That's my plug. G-Technologies, their whole thing.
I would say either the Western Digital drives. I actually like them. I know a lot of people say, oh, I've had problems with them, but I like them for the price. And also... If you want a really good drive, it will cost a bit more, but there are great drives, OWC, Other World Computing drives. They make really good hard drives.
I'm going to go with my Bear Drive example. And I've looked at a lot of drives, and this is only because I've been working on the G4 NAS drive project.
Uh-huh.
And I decided that server class drives are the way to go.
Oh.
And so Seagate has... For basically $20 more, you get two more years of warranty on the drive.
There's a 5-year warranty.
It goes
on those,
from three to five. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that they're rating the drive's mean time between failures for another 2 years. The other thing is that they supposedly run cooler than the other drive because of some other fins or something that they have on.
And the new Seagate drives are very good, I will say. They're some of the best out there right now, I think.
So it's the same drives that they use in the X-Serve and in the Mac Pro pretty much exclusively. So I looked at that, and they have 500s, they have 400s, 500s, 750s, and the one terabytes are just now coming out.
Single platter, or are they like...
It's a multi-platter.
Mm-hmm. Using the newer technology, probably.
Yeah, using the perpendicular stuff. Okay. So
are they reasonably priced, though?
Yeah, it's like $20 more per drive.
Mm-hmm. For the mean time between failure drives.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
And so you can get them where all drives are good. The thing is that you can't always find these drives at retail. Right, so if you go down to Central Computer, there's not going to be a distinction between...
If you go to Best Buy, which is what
I was going
to
say, I was using Central Computer as our local geek shop, stuff.
Yeah,
They don't necessarily have those drives there. Even though you'd think that they would, because they do a lot of corporate sales. But for sure, you're not going to find it at Best Buy, and for sure, you're not going to find it at CompUSA, because they...
CompUSA is no more.
That's why.
I was making a joke. But the idea being it's a consumer, that's a consumer store. You're not going to find a server class drive there.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's my drive pick. How about you, Ben?
I don't have anything new to add. I'll say the Western Digital for stuff that comes with an enclosure. Those MyBooks are pretty good. The 1 terabyte ones are the ones I'm using at home.
Yeah, the Pro series, especially if you want the FireWire 800.
Yeah, yeah. For Bear drives, I've always been a fan of the Seagate SATA drives. even before the SATA. Seagate stuff in general is pretty rock solid.
There was a short time there when they weren't quite.
But everybody went through this. Like, you know, the thing is that people ask me what kind of drives they should get now, and I'm like, pick one. It absolutely doesn't matter.
Well,
I'm going to change this answer. There's drives that have a 1-year warranty.
Yes,
there's drives that have a 3-year warranty, and there's drives that have a 5-year warranty.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, stay away from a drive that has a 1-year warranty, mm-hmm. because the reason it's got a 1-year warranty is that they know it's going to fail after 1 year. You know, and the warranty number is the warning label that goes with this stuff. And so at retail, you may see a cheap bargain drive that has a 1-year warranty. It's badged as a 1-year warranty because they've tested it to death, and that's the series that failed.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
Now everybody's like, oh, man.
Oh, man. Don't mess with John.
Let that sink in about, I just bought a bargain drive. I don't know what the warranty is on that. which is why in the resolution show that you've already listened to or about to listen to, depending on the order that you've received these shows, is that we say if a drive is older than 3 years, it should be retired.
Retired.
And that means, you know, you don't give it to anybody else. You take it offline and you put it in, you know, recycle. You erase it and recycle it, or
I just put it on the shelf and, you know, it's a data backup.
Yeah, then it's the almost gone backup.
Yeah.
But, you know, migrating data forward. All right.
Yep. I'm Kenji Kato.
I'm Craig Severson.
I'm Ben Durbin.
And I'm John Foster. And we'll see you on the other side. Or we've seen you on the other side, because it is the case, maybe.